as a brand, you have to ask yourself, how much does a customer cost? And then ask yourself, how much is a customer worth? So when you ask yourself how much a customer is worth, that's your customer lifetime value.
Data-driven Marketing ist für fast jede Branche ein brandaktuelles Thema. Doch die Herausforderungen werden jeden Tag komplexer. Jonas Raschedi zeigt gemeinsam mit anderen Experten, wie man diese Herausforderungen mit der Hilfe von Daten meistert.
Okay, we are starting the recording. Yeah, so my guest is Juliana. And yeah, Juliana, you could introduce yourself.
Hey, everyone that's listening. This is Juliana Jackson, and I'm really happy to be here today in the first English episode of the podcast. And I'm happy to speak to the German market, especially in English, because every time I work with people from Germany, it's always, you know, the fact that I don't speak German. So it's good. I'm happy right now. I am the chief evangelist for OmniConvert. I'm also known in different, you know, backgrounds as the CLV lady, because I have very strong opinions about customer lifetime value, but I'm also a category designer. And the category, the software category that I am designing right now is called customer value optimization. So I pretty much work with data most of the time. I'm not a data analyst. Just to make sure, based on what you're going to ask me, Jonas, afterwards. So I didn't want to say for the record, I'm not a data analyst. I work with data. I could say that I'm an e-commerce marketer because I work with the e-commerce industry. And, you know, my whole, I think, value proposition is that I help brand become profitable, focusing on lifetime value.
Amazing. So let's define what is a CLV.
Okay, customer lifetime value. So customer lifetime value is the bread and butter of e-commerce. And the reason why I'm saying that is, and this is a very important part. So customer lifetime value as a metric will not tell you much things. But if you look at what intervenes in calculating customer lifetime value, such as retention, such as order per customer, such as average order value and average days between transaction, you will see that customer lifetime value is going to be essential to, you know, for your business to understand, am I being profitable? Am I progressing or am I not? So the biggest, most important thing about customer lifetime value is that it cannot exist without thinking about acquisition costs, right? So to have a business, you have to invest money into acquiring customers, but you also have to invest money into retaining customers. So the best way to define customer lifetime value is to associate it with the acquisition cost, right? And I always say this, the ratio between your customer lifetime value and your acquisition cost answers you to a very important question. To what extent is it worth for me as an e-commerce brand to invest money in acquiring customers based on how much they will be spending in my store during a lifetime? So I guess that's the best way to define customer lifetime value. The time and, you know, the monetary, the period of time people will come back to your store. So it's a very good indicator of business health.
Yeah, for sure. But if we look at the words, yeah, it's customer lifetime value. So what we should do is define, or that the brand or e-commerce brand needs to define what's a customer, right? Because I'm sure that it's not clear. To have some thoughts on that, is a customer a new customer after 12 months of not being active? Or of 13 or 18 months, or is a new customer always? And is a customer when he buys bought one piece or whatever? Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah.
And then lifetime, what is lifetime? Is a lifetime, it's totally different on each brand, right? It could be one time shot, or for Douglas, for example, there will be for sure, or hopefully there will be replenishment stuff or a replenishment cycle, and at least the value. What does it mean? Is it the cross value? Is it calculated with the margin and stuff like that?
Yep, it's a very good question. And obviously, you cannot think of customer value like an aggregated type of metric, right? And to try to put everything under it. And if you would look at customer lifetime value from a very aggregated point of view, it would be very blinding to you from a strategy perspective. So the most important thing you pointed out earlier is the fact that you need to define the customer, right? So the best way to define a customer is to look at the value of that customer. So what is the value and that the customer brings to your business? And for you as a brand, it answers to your question, how much does this customer, worth to me? How much is it worth to me? And how much am I worth to the customer? So the best way to understand customer value is to do RFM segmentation. Recency, frequency, and monetary value segment.
Great, yes.
And this is a very passionate. Yes, this is my expertise right here. So I'm always talking about this. And actually, I will do a course very soon about RFM segmentation. I've been obsessing a bit more than health, that is healthy on this topic. But just to give you like a glimpse, and I'm happy to share a link with you of one of my articles if you want to share with the audience in your episode notes. RFM segmentation is the best way to calculate customer value. And why am I saying that? RFM segmentation, RFM is, for example, stands for recency, frequency, and monetary value. So it's an acronym. So based on the transactional behavior, based on how recent, frequent, and how much money people spend in your store, you can determine how valuable a customer is for your business. So you might have customers that have a high frequency, so they purchase multiple times for you, and they have a high order value, so they're bringing you a lot of money. But at the same time, you might have customers that purchased a lot of time from you, but they only purchased on discounts, or they only purchased with low order values. So it's not fair and smart to treat everybody the same. So if you want to understand customer lifetime value, you have to first define the type of customers that you have. And based on what you discover and based on the segments of customers that you can define using RFM, then you have to personalize the way you communicate with these customers on all your channels. So treating everybody the same is not going to help you. That's why we have so many issues of profitability in e-commerce nowadays, because what happens after purchase, what happens post-purchase is very much focused on transactions and sales, and that might increase the revenue, which is the the front end, but the back end, the profitability, the margins are very bad. So if you're an e-commerce brand and you want to grow, the last place you should look for growth is your revenue, because revenue is very deceptive and it's just a vanity metric.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think the CLV is more or less the peak of the iceberg, right? Is it the right English?
It's I think what you want to say is like, is the core, right? The center where you should optimize your business. Yeah.
And to define or to use a CLV, you need to dip deep into your data, mm-hmm. and you need to have a lot of data to calculate and define their RFM model. So then you could recalculate and define the retency, the frequency, and the value that the customer spends for sure. And then you could think about and define, as you said, different COVs to tackle different users or segments.
Yeah. And also there's two types of customer lifetime value. You have predictive lifetime value and you have historic lifetime value. So the historical lifetime value is basically referring to all your, orders, right? To all your transactional history. But predictive lifetime value it's very dependent on what your retention rate is or how many orders are per customer. So the frequency, right? And it involves other metrics in the calculation, which makes it a dynamic type of metric. So if you are looking at predictive CLV, you have to make sure to understand that the biggest influencer or the biggest, thing that changes predictive CLV is your retention rate. So if you want to really, really like the CLV is amazing, right? They don't call me CLV lady for nothing, but it's very flawed in a way. So I like what you said in the earlier when you said something like, how long will the CLV be available? Right? Because you can have you can have new customers for 3 months or for 12 months or for 2 years or for 3 years, 4 years, right? So
yep.
RFM is not enough in that case. You might have to do a bit of a step further and think about, I call it weighted average revenue, but it's not exactly that. It's some sort of cash multiplier. So I'm going to explain to you like this. If you are just acquiring a new customer, you cannot say that that new customer has the same lifetime value as a customer that purchased from you 8 times. So even though
they have
a high order value, they don't have the same value as a VIP customer or a soulmate or whatever you want to call them. So the best case scenario and the best thing that a brand, an e-commerce brand can do, they could take the segments of customers that are at their first order and they have a high order value. The RFM score in this case would be 515, so recency 5, frequency 1, and monetary value 5. And make sure that they understand that based on their buying cycle, because you can have a 30, 60 to 120 days buying cycle, depends on your business model. Some people in beauty and fashion have shorter spans between purchases. But let's say you have a 30 days, average days between transactions. So it means that that 515 that you just acquired, you have 30 days to win the money back that you spend to acquire them, which means you have to make sure that you can move that customer, that new customer, to become a repeat customer. So that 30 days, it's your cash multiplier, is where you actually can intervene in the user journey and assure that that customer is going to purchase again. And this is the only way you should look at customer lifetime value for new customers. So you have to be very cautious and strategic and not be deceived by lifetime value, because right now everyone is talking about it, but there is very big flaws in lifetime value if you don't know necessarily how to look at it. And even the formula of it in general, there's like 50 types of formula, right, for calculating lifetime value. We're actually right now working with a professor to help us do it even better. So the most important thing, look at your average days between transaction, look at the order value, and make sure you take advantage of that, you know, those days that you have, that interval of time that you have from start to end, to do something in the user, in the customer journey, to make sure that a new customer can be transformed into a repeat purchaser. And then is when you get your money back that you used to acquire them. I'm sorry. Did I spoke too much?
No. You're totally right. I think as we said, we need to have something for the takeaway for the listeners. And I think on a maturity level, the predictive CLV is from 0 to 10, something like 8. And what the users or the e-commerce brands should do, start to collect data and to play around with their RFM model, and then define a CLV, a historical CLV, and to see how this could work. And you're totally right. And then there should be the next step, if this works fine, to think about a predictive CLV, right?
Yes, exactly. Because the predictive model uses a lot of transactional history and behavioral patterns, right? Which can help you, together with RFM, can help you understand and find out the true value of the customer. And you will be able to forecast afterwards how that customer value can evolve you know, in time. So as you collect more and more data to include in the predictive lifetime value calculation, the value is going to become more accurate, because from the beginning, it will be not. To be able to do a clear predictive lifetime value calculation, you should have data. The historical COV, it's the sum of all the profits, right, from a customer's, you know, past purchases. So the number for historical lifetime value is based on existing customer data, but from a specific period of time. So it's like a P&L, right? You only can see what happened. You cannot see what will happen. So if you want to see what will happen, you have to make sure that in the calculation of the predictive lifetime value, just to wrap it up for our listeners, you have to understand the RFM segmentation very well, the transactional history and the behavior patterns from the RFM analysis.
Yeah, what you need to do is more or less calculate a probability if there will be the next purchase or not. Mm-hmm. And for example, if you get the data, there's not the purchase you thought there will be a purchase, then there will be a totally different CLV behind it, because for example, the frequency changed and you need to think about how you could do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And how you tackle them. Yeah. It's more or less when you start with a historical CLV, what you could see is you could have a segment with users. They could be inactive or become inactive they could churn, and you need to think about how you could tackle them. I think the most e-commerce brands starting with tackle the second purchase, always getting new customers. But what you should do is concentrate on your current customers, do your CRM, and think about what you could do to ensure that nobody will churn and nobody will be inactive. You can't buy a new car because your old car don't have fuel, right? That's totally
exactly.
Wrong.
Yeah, it's a very good comparison, and it's true. It's mostly everyone that gets started with COV, they're hitting a bit of, you know, walls, mostly because the distribution of customers is not perceived. And I like the fact that you pointed out that a lot of customers become inactive after some time. And there's also that 20 to 25% natural churn that happens for a brand every year. So it's very important to take into consideration that there will be a percentage of customers that you lose every year. So you should take those out of the calculation of the predictive lifetime value, because I mean, if you just look at the historical one, that's always going to be bigger than the predictive one, right? Because it's aggregated data of profits. But predictive lifetime value is calculated based on several equations that, you know, takes in account a lot of things, such as the average customer lifespan, as you correctly stated, the customer retention rate, the profit margin per customer, or I don't know, the discount rates, the coupons that you use, right? So these metrics are very important to be, I mean, it's not good to do this in Excel. Let's be real. You should use automation. You'll lose your mind. I don't even want to go there. RFM segmentation and predictive lifetime value in Excel, I don't know if you want to do it, and if you're brave enough, you can. It's just that it's a nightmare. So, you know, there's so many platforms right now. There's so many customer data platforms that you can use and to be able to track predictive lifetime value accurately. Because, you know, usually you should not calculate it for more than a year, in my opinion, and to be accurate, right?
Mm. Yeah, but it could be dependent on the what you sell, right?
Oh, of course, absolutely. Yeah. I'm totally, you know, for instance, if you're selling subscription-based or you are a CPG, a consumer, you know, packaged goods, or if you are, I don't know, selling wedding rings, which has a low frequency, it's very different. Right?
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully. But, you know, there's businesses like I like CPGs I like modeling lifetime value for consumer packaged goods because they have high frequency, right? They have more products. It's more data, right? So obviously the calculation and everything is different, right? But if you're selling products that have a low frequency, obviously you will be much more focused on acquiring customers than necessarily retaining them, because how many people can you retain if you don't have more products than a wedding ring? If you're selling wedding rings, yes, and you're selling bracelets and other stuff, yeah, you can do different, you know, campaigns to sell the complementary products. But if you're selling one product or two products, it's a total different conversation. But even in this case, you have to make sure that you ensure a very good ratio between acquisitions and lifetime value. That's the biggest problem, I think, in my opinion, because think about it like this. Acquisition cost, you're asking yourself, how much does a customer cost, right? And you have to include, oh my God, don't even get me started on how people don't know how to calculate acquisition costs. But let's assume everyone that's listening knows how to calculate acquisition costs correctly. So as a brand, you have to ask yourself, how much does a customer cost? And then ask yourself, how much is a customer worth? So when you ask yourself how much a customer is worth, that's your customer lifetime value. So you have to combine the answers to these questions to understand exactly, as I said when we started, to what extent is a customer worth their cost, right? So yeah, this is how you should be, I guess, driving your growth strategy for your brand.
I just got an idea for when there's someone in the listeners and said, okay, I have a product like wedding rings, mm-hmm, and I don't need to use a CLV. Think about a customer recommendation value. I think that could be amazing. Thinking about what kind of segments I acquire for they could recommend, yeah, myself in a good way, because what I'm thinking is for example weddings, they more or less the friends are in the same age, have the same dreams, same situation. So there could be that you think about, is there anything I could calculate that I got more recommendations from such customers instead of other segments?
I love this question, and I have a very good practical example for this. It's not the wedding rings, but it's the same, you know, narrative. So I'm working with someone that sells pet collars. They have other products in their store, but people are not buying them. But his bestseller is the pet collar that lasts for 10 years. People will not come and buy it again. But the strategy that he has and shared with me is that he's looking at customer lifetime value, he's looking at retention. But what he does is he is focused on creating lifetime value fans. So most of his business comes from word of mouth, because people are so happy with their products. And the fact that him, besides selling this very good quality product, he has them all enrolled in email flows. And he's sending newsletters, and he's sending a lot of, you know, content that is very useful for people in the pet industry. So people know him because of his content and because of how he is as a person. And he doesn't try to do transactional emails, maybe from time to time, right? But the relationship that you build as a brand owner that sells a product with a low frequency, such as a wedding ring or a pet collar or, I don't know, a coffin, goddammit, because it's stuff that you don't necessarily purchase, right, all the time. I'm sorry for the drama, but it's real. This is a business model. So when you have a product with a low, I know I'm very dramatic today, but it's real. Like, it's a good example. Or you're selling, I seen someone that was selling like shaving devices, and they have a warranty of 10 years, right? So if you don't sell other complementary products, your best bet as a brand owner is to focus on developing the relationships with your customers, especially because if people are happy with the product for being super qualitative and helping them resolve the problem that they hired your product for, and if you delight these people by your content that you can put out from all the channels like email and social media and, you know, so on, in your customer support, whatever, people are going to recommend you further. So this particular case that I'm talking about, petcolors.co.au from Australia, he has a retention rate of 8%. He has the biggest retention rate in his business, and his acquisition costs are not big. So the way he has this retention rate is because most of it is very good, you know, simple, good marketing. But at the same time, a lot of his business comes from the word of mouth. So if you're selling a one-time product, if you're selling a product with low frequency, you still have to invest in developing relationships with customers that will recommend you if they are at the same wedding or if they are having, you're in the same park with your dogs and cats or whatever you have, or a horse. But what I'm saying is that even if you're highly dependent on acquisitions and bringing new customers, you cannot still just stop the relationship and the nurturing of the existing customers, because word of mouth can make or break your business. Look what happened last night with Robinhood. They did what they did, right? In the stock market. They did what they did, and everyone went on Reddit and, you know, blew a part of Wall Street. Because that's word of mouth right now, and this is the era that we're living. People on internet can make a break or business. So they went from a good, you know, rating to a one rating from 100,000 people in 1 hour. And they just ruined the part of, you know, Wall Street. But it's good for them because, you know, I don't even want to start on that topic. But yeah, you get what I'm saying. Word of mouth is important, no matter if you send consumer product, product and, you know, that's super consumable, or if you sell wedding rings and, I don't know, pet colors.
Yeah.
So focus on your customers.
Yeah, totally right. I think that's the acronym. CLV is the value of your customers. And you need to think about how you define and calculate the value on a specific time. And if you have a product which is a one-time thing, then you need to think about, calculate the recommendation and the something like a branding value in it.
Absolutely.
Okay, I think now we are more or less at 30 minutes, Juliana. Do you want that we more or less have a summary, a management summary, what we should recommend for startups, medium-sized companies, and at least enterprises, how for the CLV topic?
You should do up to
3 points, and I will do some.
That's one of the best questions I got in a podcast, and I've been through quite a few. So that, I love it. So for a startup, for a business that just started, that doesn't have too much data, I'm going to give you an advice that I received from my very good friend of mine called Jonathan Ivanko. And he said something that if you want to start a business in e-commerce and you don't have that much data, start a newsletter first. And build with the people from that newsletters. That is how you're going to gather data. And then you have an audience that you can nurture for a period of time and then sell to. So if you just want to get started, start first with a newsletter. Provide mad value to the people that sign up in that newsletter. And then you will have an audience. If you're a mid-sized brand, you're probably struggling between being acquisition-centric and product-centric. Acquisition-centric means you are spending a lot of money on bringing new customers. You are focusing on revenue, traffic, and AOV instead of focusing on being profitable. And you might have this need to go and focus more on the product part of e-commerce, which is features and discounts and different things that are only touching the surface. So I say if you're a mid-sized e-commerce brand, a 5-6-figure one, my best advice to you right now is to stop and try to take time and work with people that know data and just give your business a health check, a financial health check, and a data health check from a customer data perspective, and look exactly at how much money you are spending acquiring customers or spending on different marketing channels versus how much people are staying with you or purchasing from you. So it's very important to calculate the CLV-CAC ratio. I think for a mid-sized and bold enterprise brand, this is the one ratio that should be the thing that you have on your vision board. So I wish for more brands to understand how important it is to do a calculation, a correct calculation of the acquisition cost that includes the overheads and salaries and money spent on tools and agencies and so on. And then look at what are they really getting. I think people are shooting themselves in the foot from a profitability perspective. And this is because of the culture that we're living in, the marketing culture that we're living in, that is very much focused on sales. But now, you know, I feel like the market is moving in the right direction with being profitable, with thinking about retention, with thinking about lifetime value. And as you can see, you know, whatever is happening right now with the cookies and everything just enforces that, right? Enforces that you should be in full ownership of your data. And if you're an enterprise brand, don't sleep on the year. A lot of enterprise brands are either, they're also are, you know, brick and mortars, and then they're, you know, they have a hybrid, they're, you know, in store and online. And it's easier for them to sustain a business because they have the store component, but at the same time, people are more keen to purchase online at the moment. So you have, if you're an enterprise brand, you have the luck to have a store experience and associate the great store experiences with the online, and you go there with more trust. But if the online disappoints you, it's going to be very hard for you to get those people in the stores. So I'm going to give you a personal example with IKEA. IKEA, Romania. Okay, so I'm not talking about IKEA outside of Romania. I love IKEA. I used to go to their store a lot. I like being there. Probably one of the few people that actually enjoy going through IKEA and getting lost. When the pandemic hit, I was pregnant and I was trying to buy clothes for my, toys and stuff for my, my baby. And their website experience on Romania's IKEA is the worst experience I have experienced in my life. Horrible. So this made me so, it just threw me off so bad that I didn't even want to go to their store anymore. Not even for the meatballs, for the Swedish meatballs. So what I'm saying is that if you are a brand that is successful already and you have an in-store presence and people know of you, don't sleep on 1 year, because there's so many smaller brands than yours that have such a rapid growth and such a good baggage behind them that it's going to be hard for you to be able to sustain yourself unless you also look at the lifetime value. And look what happened to Casper. Look what happened to JCPenney's. Look what happened with so many giants. So you're never too big to fall. And a COV, again, to CAC ratio that is too high, because this is another problem, because a lot of these big brands have a very, if you look at the data, you might think because their CLV is high and their acquisition costs are low, they are winning. But the thing is that if you have a CLV of, let's say, a ratio from 3 to 1, it might be very bad for you, because it means you're not, your customers are worth to your business, but you're not putting enough money into retaining them. So if your customers have a high lifetime value to you, then they have a high lifetime value to your competitors as well. So if you're not willing to to shell out money to acquire them effectively, it's almost guaranteed that your competition will win eventually. So if you're a big brand, don't sleep on yourself at all. And that's my take, Jonas.
Thanks. Yeah. So I hopefully am much faster. So startup phase is more or less gather data, use Google data studios, or at least gather data within BigQuery and check the data. Have a visualization tool on top to understand the data and the customers, and to think about where could I tackle. Or go further in my growth. Medium-sized companies think about the current status. For example, if you get money from an investor, I think you don't need to be that much aggregate on the CLV, but because you what you need to be is get more market shares instead of being profitable. Yeah, thanks. And at least for the enterprise companies is more less saying check the CLV, but at least be aware of your current customers. Check the inactive ones. Check the ones they could churn and be or ensure that this will not happen. Yeah,
I love it. Love it. Yeah, you are definitely much shorter than me. I'm very passionate about this topic.
That's great. So now the last question,
yes,
Juliana, for the passion, data in your personal life.
That's a very good question. I have no idea how I'm going to answer to this, but the way I look at, you know, the relationships that I have with people is, I guess I'm not keeping count of the, you know, frequency of me doing good stuff and getting them back. But how I look at data is just more in terms of always, you know, researching before I assume stuff, always try to ask myself, is this the right thing to do? Should I do this? Is it this worth it for me to do? So I think the way I use data is that the best answer I can give you is that I use data in my day-to-day life to not make assumptions and try to focus more on facts than on emotions all the time. And it's hard because I'm a woman, but I'm trying. Yeah, great.
So thank you to be the first English guest in my podcast. I think it was a great episode, and the CLV topic is an amazing topic, and you have a great knowledge. Thank you, Juliana. And great. Okay, let's see how the feedback is for this episode, and that it could be that I'm writing you again.
That would be
thanks.
Great. Thank you for having me, Jonas.
Mehr vom Podcast? Abonniere My Data is Better Than Yours und bewerte ihn gerne.